Welcome to the B2B Influence Spotlight on Industry Game Changers podcast. I'm Paula Keoki, founder and CEO of Outward Media. Outward Media is a trusted data partner to Fortune 2000 businesses and startups alike. We provide the highest quality audience data to fuel engaged, integrated, omnichannel campaigns. Our mission is to deliver real data, real results, and invaluable reach to real people. Welcome, everyone. This is the B2B Influence podcast. I'm Paula Keoki, your host, and today we have Blake Sidney. He is the CEO of Profound Networks. And Blake, I've known Blake for probably over 20 years. He's got a very interesting business that is keying on domains as the golden key and looking at it as a overlooked asset within an organization's repertoire. So we're going to jump right in with Blake. So Blake, given that most people think of domains as web addresses, and you've described it as the golden key, why are domains such an overlooked asset in the enterprise data, and what are some of the ways companies can unlock their value?
It's a good question. One of the reasons why the domain is overlooked is that for 150 years, a legal entity was defined by its physical location. During the industrial age, essentially, companies were recognized by their factories, by their sales offices, by their logistics offices, by the manufacturing centers, and they're essentially the physical footprint that made up that company. And that served very well for well over a century. However, today we're in the information age. And in the information age, things have moved from the physical to the digital. Now you have companies that have no physical presence, yet they're generating billions of dollars in revenues. And this causes a problem for B2B companies that are traditionally tying businesses to a physical location. As one very good example, Airbnb does not have a physical headquarters or a physical location.
Okay.
The irony is that Airbnb provides physical locations to millions of travelers around the world. They're entirely a digital organization.
Okay.
And everyone knows the brand Airbnb and Airbnb.com. That is the only location you need to know for Airbnb. But it's not a physical location. It's a digital location. Yeah. And Airbnb.com uniquely identifies the company. It is an organic, open source, essentially unrestricted B2B identifier that uniquely identifies the organization. But unlike other B2B identifiers that often have an integer or an alphanumeric code, there's no identifying principle behind that number. It's not a random number, but it's a proprietary number that in order to unlock its value, you must subscribe to that particular B2B database. Whereas with a domain, there is a tremendous amount of value that can be unlocked with the domain itself. And Profound specializes in compiling such digital attributes tied to a domain. For example, if you want to know whether the company's running e-commerce, that would be tied to the domain. How many backlinks does it have? How much website traffic is it getting? Who's running its mail server? Where is it physically hosted? Are they running CRM? Are they a cloud customer? Are they a software as a service provider? And so on and so forth. The domain has become a very powerful key that unlocks a huge amounts of enrichment information that really can only be tied to a domain. And with the mapping of domain to physical location and physical entity, you have the best of both worlds. Okay. So I don't think one replaces the other. I think that they serve in very complementary roles.
But like you said, there is no physical location. There's that.
In some cases, it's the only thing that one has when trying to understand a particular business. And for many companies in the B2B space, if a business that they're targeting, especially for technology companies or for cloud companies or software companies, a company that does not have their own website domain is probably not a viable prospect customer for them. So it's a minimal layer of digital investment to have your own website domain or email domain that makes them a viable candidate for many different businesses.
And you're getting a little sidetracked here, but you guys were able to validate that it's really truly a real active domain, correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of parameters that feed into whether a domain is truly active. For example, when was it registered in the Whois? If it was registered last week, that tells one story. If it was registered 10 years ago, that tells quite a different story as to the provenance of that particular website. And what's also valuable with a domain is that with one click, you can see what the company's all about. They want to provide to the world an overview of who they are, what they do, what products they sell, what markets they cater to. There's usually an about us for many B2B companies with a website, or you can buy something on their website. They're an e-commerce portal. And when somebody's doing research to identify a particular prospect, sometimes the very first thing they do is click on the website to do a little bit of research and background. It's not like they're going to look at the physical address alone and understand exactly what the company does. It's just the city, state, and zip, and the address give a location, tell some information. If you're in Beverly Hills, that's one thing, or if you're in Camel Bump, Wyoming, that's another sort of that's another sort of indicator. But for the most part, the website itself reveals a tremendous amount of information regarding what the business does, and it's usually the first place people look when they're investigating a company for a variety of different use cases.
For sure, that's what I do. Like you said, I think most people do. So, with traditional identity models like corporate filings or credit bureau information, capture brick and mortar companies well, but they struggle with the digital first businesses. How should organizations rethink business identity in today's economy?
A business identity, the legal registration is often very important for a wide variety of compliance, for legal factors. If you're a bank, you want to know where that company is incorporated. You want to know where they're physically located for insurance purposes. The physical location of a business is crucial for many use cases, but increasingly, the digital location or the website, the email address is also becoming a vital characteristic to have. And if a credit bureau only has the physical location and they don't have the website domain or the email domain, then there are situations where they lack enough information to really provide a viable credit rating or risk profile. As one example, when companies are registering online, they typically will they'll enter their company name and possibly their address, but it may not be the address that they registered with to legally register the company. They may be in a sales offshoot location or new location they just added to their network. But if they enter their website domain or their email address, which is a very common ask on web forms around the internet and so on, that email domain can uniquely identify that particular business. In other cases, if you have a company name that's generic, AAA Locksmith, for example, or Acme Manufacturing, a lot of companies struggle with pinpointing precisely which AAA Locksmith they're talking about. Any given city may have a dozen of those because that's the first one they find in the phone book, which was a common way that people identified such businesses. But AAALocksmith.com is uniquely identifying a specific version of that company. So it's a great way to distinguish companies that have a generic company name because that you cannot share the same domain with multiple entities. Domains are uniquely identifiable to one particular entity in most cases.
But using your AAA analogy there, if there's 15 locations here in Los Angeles, how do you differentiate? Do you go to the address then to differentiate for each location?
That's one way. If AAA Locksmith, if they're owned by the same legal entity and AAALocksmith.com lists all 15 locations, you know that you're dealing with the right family of companies. So you have the right ultimate, if you will, record for the given company. Now, if you need to understand which specific location you're dealing with, then so the domain will get you into the right ballpark in cases where there's lots of different physical locations. And this is where there's still a need for credit bureau location data to provide a unique identifier for each individual physical location. The domain gets you into the right ballpark, and the specific physical location gets you into the right seat using sort of an arena analogy there.
Is that part of the work that Profound does?
It's certainly part of the work. So we understand that a lot of companies struggle with mapping the correct domain to their physical location data set. So we've developed platforms that, given a company name, address, city, state, zip, and phone number, and in many cases, we're dealing with hundreds of millions of such physical locations, we've developed a platform that will essentially search the internet and identify the correct domain for that particular physical location. And we use the concept of match flag strings so that a company name, an address, a city, state, zip, and phone number each provide a flag as to whether that specific attribute matched what's found on the target website. So if you provided us with 15 or 100 companies, all with AAA Locksmith, but we only found 15 locations at that particular domain, it's going to give you that one domain for those 15 locations, and the others won't match what's on the target website. So you'll either get a different AAA, it might be AAA Dash Locksmith, it might be AAA Locksmith.net, or some other unique domain where there's a high match rate with the location that's provided. So the system does enable the parsing of generic locations from one company family to another.
Intricate.
Indeed.
So, inside large enterprises, marketing, sales, and compliance, and often IT, work from disconnected silos, as I'm sure you're well aware. Why is it so difficult to create a unified view, and what makes domains a strong foundation for building that consistency? I think you touched on it already, but why do they have such difficulty with that?
Master data management and linkage is a difficult subject matter, and companies have struggled with improving their level of master data management for a very long time. And I think that the tools and the suite of services that we bring to the market offer a different perspective on how to link businesses together, one of which is what I just described, where we're tying the same domain to 15 different locations based on the match of those locations to what's published on the website. And that's a very compelling match process because the website itself, in many people's minds, is the source of truth for that particular company. It's hard to argue with AAALocksmith.com matching a particular input location if that location was published on that target website itself. And you see the address, city, state, zip, and phone number are all shared in your input record and what's published on the target website. So when we have that level of match, it complements or in some cases replaces the other systems that are used to tie businesses to a particular family. But again, we don't make the claim that using digital match keys like the website domain is a complete replacement for the many very well defined MDM tools that are in the marketplace. We think that it serves as an excellent complement to those other match capabilities. So I think the two in combination provide a much better result than either one in isolation.
That makes sense. And I would think that the domain is much better than using like an email address, right? To
In many cases, a lot of businesses still use a username at gmail.com. And when you have a gmail.com email domain, it's impossible to use that as a way to
Right.
identify who the B2B company is. But when they use their corporate email domain itself, then it uniquely identifies that specific company. And as an example, if you are a bank and you're doing a campaign to set up a seminar with financial institutions, and you do a campaign, say your goal is to get 100 seats filled for your seminar. You send out a campaign of 100,000, hoping to get all the to fill that seminar. If you send out an email to joe@gmail.com and they come back and say, "Yeah, I'm Joe at Goldman Sachs," you have no real way of verifying whether that email is truly tied to Goldman Sachs. However, if you send it to Joe at gs.com, gs.com being the Goldman Sachs domain, and they respond and put gs.com as their email domain, then at that stage, you have a very high degree of confidence that you have reached the right person at the right company. Once again, the domain is an excellent way to ensure that the, especially the B2B domain, is a great way to ensure that you're reaching the right intended audience.
And you're able to tell if it's the email domain or the corporate domain, right?
Yes, if it's a throwaway email domain or a disposable or an ISP domain or a free email domain, we track 30,000 such email domains so that we can identify whether they are truly tied to the company or not. There are some cases where it gets a little tricky. As an example, the American ISP Comcast issues Comcast.net email domains to all of their subscribers. Now, these are subscribers are customers of Comcast. They're not corporate executives. And Comcast in particular will issue Comcast.com email domains to all of their employees and executives so that they make that distinction, changing the top level domain .net for their subscribers and .com for their employees. But there are cases where a company doesn't. A good example is Yahoo.com. Okay. Yahoo uses the same email domain for their employees and executives, and they also provide Yahoo.com domains to anybody who wants to set up a free email account with them. So in that particular case, it's exceptionally difficult to distinguish between the two. And that's where secondary or tertiary data partners can help split that particular one into employees versus customers. But in most cases, outside of ISPs and free email domain providers, corporate email domains are uniquely identifying who they are, or at least what organization they belong to. If they're able to respond to that email domain, nobody outside of Goldman Sachs is going to be able to respond to any email address at gs.com. That's exclusively used for Goldman Sachs. Now, there are other cases where it's also somewhat tricky. For example, in America, .edu for educational institutions, they will give a .edu, Harvard.edu will provide email to their students, their alumni, their faculty and staff. So it's difficult to distinguish between a student and an alumni and a faculty. And even when these students graduate, and even when the staff retire, they retain those email addresses in perpetuity. So that's another example where you're not 100% clear if the person that you're emailing at harvard.edu is actively employed by Harvard, or they're a student, or they were a student, or they were an employee in the past. So there are edge cases where there is some complexity in creating a definitive answer to that particular question. On the other hand, some of our clients, Microsoft as an example, value the total number of harvard.edu email domains, because if we were to count the total number of unique usernames at harvard.edu, that informs Microsoft how many seats that the Harvard email server is currently supporting. Okay. And that's a valuable metric on its own right, but it doesn't support a lot of sales or marketing use cases where precision is required. So there are challenges, but they're not insurmountable challenges. In many cases with sales and marketing approaches, you want at least like a directionally accurate result. Precision is not required like it may be for financial institutions issuing credit, or for risk compliance, or for regulatory use cases. Precision is required, but for sales and marketing, there's a little bit more wiggle room for precision versus coverage in this case.
Yeah, it's interesting. So do they ever retire the harvard.edu? What if somebody passes away?
Yeah, that's a good point. To my knowledge, they keep those email addresses in perpetuity. We see the username counts for .edus growing and growing. They rarely ever
shrink. I've wondered the same thing about LinkedIn. Do they, Do the profiles just last forever?
With LinkedIn, they do have a last edit date. So there are telltale signs that the profile is no longer being maintained. So there's additional metrics that one can factor into to understand the level of update detail. But there are also this cases where websites can still be up and running for years after the business has gone out of as is no longer functioning. But in that particular case too, there are ways to determine when that site was last edited, when certain additional metrics can inform us of for websites that are constantly updating, they're changing their content, more backlinks are being added, pointing to a website, whereas a ghost website or one that's just on autopilot and is no longer a functioning business usually has a pretty flat ecosystem pointing to it. It usually dies, but it's never removed from the internet, especially if it's a free hosting provider.
I was wondering about that. It seems like if it wasn't free, that they would naturally go away at some point.
Yeah, if they're paying for the hosting provider, eventually they'll stop paying their bill and they'll be decommissioned. But there are a number of free hosting providers that just keep them up forever. And it's not an insurmountable problem, but it does add a little bit of noise to the whole B2B digital scenario.
And that's something you all assist with as well, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So, with cookies and device IDs disappearing, marketers are desperate to understand which touch points drive the best results. How can domains provide a more durable way to solve attribution and make insights actionable for decision makers?
Attribution is an interesting point. As one example, you have IP addresses. Every website automatically logs or at least sees the IP addresses of all their visitors. And about 20% of those IP addresses can be converted into corporate networks, B2B VPNs, and attribution can be determined based on the IP address alone. And roughly on average, 20% of the time for consumer, for B2C websites, it's a little lower. For B2B websites, it's a little higher. But for in general, about 20% of IP addresses can be mapped to, can be attributed to a B2B network. So if you're doing an email campaign, as an example, and you've sent out 100,000 emails, you can then, if your client is actively monitoring their website for traffic, they can see, does the IP address in 20% of the time match? Does the domain tied to that IP address match the domain of the email that you sent out? And that's a pretty strong level of attribution, especially if there's a if there, if you've sent it them to a specific link in the email that only somebody who's clicking on that link would have access to. And this bypasses the requirement for cookies completely. So there are still ways of managing attribution in the digital realm, even when cookies are disappearing due to increased laws like GDPR and California's COPPA laws, and among many other things. So there are, and if IP addresses at the corporate level do not uniquely identify individual people, IP addresses on residential networks have a little bit more of a PII issue. But as far as we understand from our legal, IP addresses tied to a business don't share the same complexities as IP addresses tied to people. So attribution is still certainly possible for a significant percentage of certain kinds of campaigns. And I think that in the digital realm, there are other ways of reaching business people. For example, marketing on LinkedIn is one example. I mentioned email campaigns and tracking website linkage attribution. So while the level of attribution may be narrowing, it's not disappearing.
So, as AI privacy regulations and cybersecurity reshape the data landscape, enterprises need identifiers that are both durable and trusted. How do you see domains shaping the next generation of identity resolution across marketing, risk, and compliance as we look into the future?
From a risks perspective, especially cyber risk perspective, it's crucial to have a mapping of domain to a specific company. And the reason for that is because a business network is not just their website. A business network is the website and all the host names, that share that domain, all the children domains that roll up to what we call an ultimate domain. And just as an example, you may have Microsoft.com as the ultimate domain for Microsoft Corporation, but Bing.com and Live.com and Xbox.net, and we have thousands of other children domains that roll up to Microsoft.com, the ultimate domain. And if you look at all the host names pointing to those children domains, and those host names are tied to IP addresses, those IP addresses can be tied to specific devices that in many cases have a specific, may have a vulnerability that's been identified. So when you look at the cyber risk landscape, it's almost impossible not to really look at the attack surface of a cybersecurity footprint. If you don't have the domain properly mapped to that legal entity, you're flying completely blind from a cyber risk perspective. We've also performed several, we've identified several use cases with companies that are very concerned with sanctions compliance. As in, there are some companies that export encryption services, and many of these can be classified as munitions. And there are serious penalties for transferring military-grade encryption to sanctioned countries. Now, in the case of what you have with certain sanctioned countries, that is that they're making an attempt to set up sort of front companies in unsanctioned countries, but they're really the end user is located in a sanctioned country like Russia, Iran, North Korea, Venezuela, and so on. So one of the areas where we have been supporting our clients is by looking at the global IP infrastructure tied to a given domain and leveraging the children domains and all of the host names that roll up into an ultimate domain, and looking at the countries where their IP addresses are physically located, leveraging a capability called IP geolocation. And there are many ways to subvert IP geolocation with VPNs, proxies, Tor, anonymizers, and so on. But for fixed infrastructure, they don't bother to run it through these obfuscation services. They don't really see a requirement to do. But when we look at holistically at a global network, we're able to list where those IP addresses are physically located. And if we see, for example, we found one example, fast20.de, it's a German top-level domain. They have numerous IP addresses located in Iran. And it appears to be a potential front for an Iranian entity. And we were able to mitigate that risk. I don't think the website actually works, but they may be using email at that domain. But the point is that by analyzing the physical locations and the countries where their infrastructure is located, we can help our clients mitigate the risk of falling, of being tricked into thinking that the company that they're dealing with is really a German company, when in fact, if most of their infrastructure is in a sanctioned country, they've got to add some friction into that onboarding process and say, "We're not ready to onboard you." Because they don't have to tell them exactly why, but they just may say, "Look, we're rejecting your application. Have a nice day." So they can sidestep a lot of the sanctions compliance risk that a lot of our clients are very concerned with.
Seems like it's just getting more and more of that going on, like it's escalating.
It is. And there's, I mean, cybersecurity is a crucial, huge area right now. More theft is happening through cyber crime than crime itself. The Hollywood likes to portray bank robbers storming into the bank with guns blazing.
Not anymore.
That's not the way money's getting stolen anymore. Billions are getting stolen via cybercrime, and maybe tens of millions are being stolen the sort of quote unquote the traditional way. So these days, cybercrime has eclipsed traditional armed robbery type of crime. And it can be done from any location on earth with an internet connection, which makes it very difficult from a jurisdiction perspective to prosecute. Or so really what it comes down to is having really securing your network and making sure that you don't have these open doors and weak links in your in your security chain. And we're working with insurance companies that underwrite cyber risk to help identify in their portfolio which of their clients are at risk for breaches. And a
Wow.
lot of that has to do with our focus on tying domains to legal entities and then rolling up all that infrastructure of IP addresses to the domain level. And that holistically provides a much better picture of the cyber risk for a company. But it doesn't complete the entire picture
Oh.
because, you know, you're still going to have it also requires a lot of employee training. If people are doing phishing attacks and sending you links to a funny cat video.exe and you double click it and it compromises your system, that's not necessarily weakness in the network. That's a weakness in employee training. And that's not something that network security can guard against. But it doesn't mean that you dismiss network security. It just means that network security is one layer that you have to focus on. Employee training is another layer that you have. So you have a multi-layered approach to try to mitigate the risk of cyber breaches, but there's no silver bullet that just
No.
eliminates it all in one shot.
I can't even imagine what it must be like for banks and financial institutions to try to stay on top of this. I'm sure you probably have a pretty good idea working with them, but I can't even imagine what's all involved in it just to try to protect everything.
Absolutely. It's more resources, more and more resources are being poured into this particular problem.
Because
And
they're get because
it's not getting
because the
better.
bad guys are getting better at it.
They are getting better at it.
Yeah.
And but that's why the good guys need to also try to be one step ahead and help support the protection of these networks.
And Profound is one of the good guys.
Yep.
So I know your website is profound.net, so people can learn more there. Is there anybody within the organization, yourself or whoever, that if somebody wants to learn a little bit more that can contact? Or do you recommend just going to the website and maybe contacting through there?
Yeah, you can contact. We have multiple sales reps. We have Ben Delisle, who's been with the company for a very long time. Feel free to contact Ben. Steve Rand, who you know well. Tom Bontempo, who's heading up sales. And we have a bunch of sales reps that focus on specific sectors and industry sectors that we'd be happy to support. So yeah, reach out to us and, you know, we'd love to understand your use case and see if there's areas that we can support in terms of mapping the digital to your physical locations and legal entities, or with mitigating cyber security risk, among many other use cases.
It's just going to get bigger. Blake, this has been very informative. I thank you so much for, I know you're on the road, taking the time to jump on and chat with us, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you very much, Paula. Pleasure. Take care. Bye.
Hi, I'm Paula Keoki, and thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media, and don't forget to rate or review the podcast wherever you listen. Your feedback helps us grow and inspire others. If you're a successful business leader or marketing professional with insights to share, we'd love to feature you as a guest. Visit outwardmedia.com/podcast to learn more. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode and connect with us on social media to join the conversation. Visit outwardmedia.com to explore how we can help take your strategic audience building to the next level. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.